We're going to talk about the trigger finger chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something called trigger finger. Now, it sounds, well, kind of simple, maybe even a bit dramatic, but it's actually a really common issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be surprisingly painful. We want to really unpack what's going on mechanically, what causes it, and importantly, how it's treated.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one because, you know, the name trigger finger gives you a hint, but the actual anatomy involved, it's this really intricate interplay of forces in the hand.
Right.
Understanding why it happens, not just what the symptom is, that's really key. It's more than just, you know, a finger getting stuck.
So let's start right there. What is trigger finger fundamentally? What's happening?
All right. So at its core, trigger finger is basically a situation where one of the tendons that bends your finger, the flexor tendons, gets caught. It snags as it's trying to glide through this little tunnel, its protective sheath.
Like a line getting caught on a fishing rod guide.
Exactly like that. And that snagging, it limits the movement, causes pain, and then you get that classic symptom.
It's triggering.
Right, that distinctive, sometimes audible snap or click when the finger finally forces its way through, usually into extension after being kind of locked in a bent position. That's where the name comes from.
Okay, that makes sense. And there's more technical term too, right?
Yes. Medically, it's called stenosing tenosynovitis.
Stenosing tenosynovitis.
Okay. And it actually describes it perfectly. Stenosing means a narrowing, like a bottleneck.
Uh-huh.
And tenosynovitis refers to inflammation or, well, thickening involving the tendon and its sheath, the synovium. So put together, it tells you the problem is a narrowing of the space for the tendon. The tunnel is too tight for the rope, basically.
So it's a space issue, a mechanical blockage, not weakness.
Precisely. It's all about the mechanics.
So how does that happen? Let's get into the structure and function side.
Yeah.
What parts of the hand are involved here?
Okay. So finger bending relies mainly on two tendons per finger. The flexor digitorum profundus, that's the deep one. It bends the very tip of your finger, the DIP joint.
I got it.
And then there's the flexor digitorum superficialis, which is closer to the surface, and that bends the middle joint, the PIP joint. Think about making a fist.
Right.
These tendons run down from your forearm through the palm and out into the fingers.
And they don't just float freely in there, do they?
No, not at all. They travel through a very specific tunnel along each finger called the fiber osseous canal.
Fiber osseous. So fibrous tissue and bone.
Exactly. It's formed by the bones of the finger and this intricate system of pulleys, all lined by a tendon sheath. And this pulley system is absolutely crucial.
Pulleys, like on a crane.
Sort of, yeah. They act like guides, holding the tendons right up against the bone. Without them, when you tried to bend your finger, the tendon would pull away from the bone. It's called bowstringing.
Ah, okay. So you lose power and control.
Hugely. The pulleys convert the straight pull from your forearm muscles into efficient rotation at the finger joints.
And I understand there are different types of these pulleys.
That's right. You've got the main ones, the annular pulleys, A1 to A5. Think of them as strong fibrous rings holding everything down tight.
Okay.
And then you have the cruciform pulleys, C1 to C3. They're sort of cross-shaped and sit between some of the annular ones. They allow a bit more flexibility so the sheath doesn't buckle when you bend your finger fully.
Right. Allows for the full range of motion.
Exactly. Now, the problem in trigger finger arises when this whole canal system becomes too tight stenotic. The tendon just can't glide smoothly anymore.
And how does it get too tight?
Two main ways, really. Either the tendon itself thickens up, sometimes forming a distinct little lump or nodule, or the tunnel itself, the sheath and pulleys around the tendon, thickens. Either way, you end up with a size mismatch. The tendon is too big for the tunnel it needs to pass through.
It's amazing how a system designed for smooth movement can cause such a jam. So why does this tightening happen? What are the root causes, especially involving that A1 pulley you mentioned?
Well, a lot of it seems to come down to load. High forces, especially when you're doing a strong power grip, seem to concentrate stress right at the edge of the A1 pulley.
And where exactly is the A1 pulley located?
It's right at the base of the finger, in the palm, at the level of that big knuckle joint, the MCP joint. It's actually anchored to something called the volar plate on the palm side.
Okay.
And it seems the pulley responds to this repeated high stress by, well, bulking up. It undergoes hypertrophic growth. It gets thicker.
So the body tries to reinforce the area under stress.
And inadvertently makes the tunnel tighter.
Exactly.
And at the same time, you might get a nodule forming on the tendon itself, possibly from the friction, the abrasion of rubbing against that tight pulley. So you get this mismatch. A thickened pulley, maybe a nodule on the tendon, or both. The tendon just physically can't squeeze through the A1 pulley opening smoothly anymore.
And that's the triggering.
That's the triggering. And it also explains why the finger often gets stuck bent. Your flexor muscles are usually strong enough to pull the thick part of the tendon into the tight spot.
Right.
But the muscles that straighten the finger, the extensors, often aren't strong enough to pull it back out against that same restriction.
I see. It's easier to pull it through one way than the other.
Precisely. An imbalance of forces caused by a mechanical block.
Okay, that mechanical explanation is really clear. Mm-hmm. Now, who tends to get this? Is it associated with age?
Yeah.
And what about kids? Is there a congenital form?
Yes, there absolutely is aversion in children, usually under 2 years old. It most commonly affects the thumb, and we call it congenital trigger thumb.
Trigger thumb.
Typically, the thumb is sort of stuck in a bent position at the end joint, the IP joint. And often you can actually feel a little lump, a nodule, at the base of the thumb in the palm crease.
Interesting. And how does it usually show up in adults?
In adults, it often starts more gradually. Maybe just some stiffness in the finger, especially noticeable in the morning when you wake up.
Okay.
Then it might progress to a painless clicking or catching feeling as you move the finger. Eventually, it can become quite painful, and the finger might lock in that bent position, meaning you to use your other hand to physically straighten it out.
Ouch.
Yeah. And just like in kids, adults often have a tender spot, maybe a palpable nodule, right over that A1 pulley area at the base of the affected finger in the palm.
And it sounds like for that classic adult case, painful click, finger getting stuck, tender nodule, felt right there. The diagnosis is pretty straightforward. The source even suggests there isn't really a differential diagnosis in that scenario.
For the classic presentation, yes, it's often quite clear. When you feel that tender nodule right where the tendon is catching and passive extension is blocked until it pops, it's hard to mistake it for anything else.
But what if it's not quite so classic? Are there other things it could be mistaken for?
Sure. If the picture isn't perfectly clear, you might think about other conditions. Dupuytren's disease, for example, causes tissue thickening in the palm that can pull the finger down into a bent position, a fixed contracture. That might look similar initially.
Okay.
Or you could have stiffness from the joint capsule itself tightening up. Sometimes maybe a loose piece of cartilage or bone inside the MCP joint could cause a mechanical block.
Like a jam in the joint itself.
Right. Or even an issue with the extensor tendons, the ones that straighten the finger. If they aren't working properly, the finger would stay bent because the flexors overpower them.
But how would you tell that apart from trigger finger?
The key difference there is that if it's an extensor problem, you can usually gently straighten the finger passively without feeling that distinct blockage or snap. It just doesn't have the active ability to straighten. With trigger finger, there's a definite mechanical impediment you can feel.
Got it. So, given the diagnosis is often clinical, based on the symptoms and exam, is there ever a need for lab tests?
Good question. Not usually for diagnosing the trigger finger itself, but tests can be important for looking for underlying causes.
So secondary trigger finger.
Exactly. Trigger finger can sometimes be associated with other systemic conditions, things like rheumatoid arthritis, gout, diabetes, thyroid problems, amyloidosis, even certain collagen vascular disorders.
Hmm.
And it's important because if the trigger finger is secondary to one of these conditions, the outcome after treatment might not be as good. It might be more resistant or more likely to come back.
I see. So you might test for things like diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis, not to diagnose the finger, but to check for these other related issues.
Precisely. It helps manage expectations and guides the overall treatment plan if there's an underlying condition contributing.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about looking at the whole picture, not just the finger.
It really is.
We have been talking about a chapter from the free and peer-reviewed textbook, Orthopedia, at www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vayet. It's an incredible resource for understanding musculoskeletal medicine. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book.
Okay, so moving on to treatment. If someone has trigger finger, what are the options? Where do you usually start?
Well, the good news is that non-surgical approaches are often very effective. So we usually start there. This can include things like activity modification, basically trying to avoid the repetitive gripping or high-stress activities that might be aggravating it.
Makes sense. Give it a rest.
Right. Anti-inflammatory medications like ibuprofen can help with the pain and maybe some inflammation. Sometimes splinting the finger, particularly the middle PIP joint, can help rest the tendon mechanism.
Okay.
But one of the mainstays of non-operative treatment is a corticosteroid injection.
The steroid shot. How does that work specifically for trigger finger? So the steroid, which is a strong anti-inflammatory, is injected very precisely into the tendon sheath right around that tight A1 pulley.
Directly into the problem area.
Exactly. The goal is to reduce the inflammation and swelling of the tendon and the sheath, effectively making the tendon slimmer or the tunnel wider, relieving that size mismatch.
And is one shot usually enough?
Often it is, but sometimes if the first one doesn't fully resolve it, or if it helps but then wears off, a second or even occasionally a third injection might be tried over time.
Are there risks with the injections?
There are potential side effects, though they're not extremely common. You can sometimes get a bit of fat atrophy or death right at the injection site, which might look like a small dent, or the skin pigment might lighten a bit their hypopigmentation. Very rarely, there's a risk of the tendon weakening or even rupturing, but that's considered quite uncommon with careful injection technique.
Okay, so injections are a key step. But what if they don't work or the problem keeps coming back? What's the next level?
If non-operative treatments fail to provide lasting relief, then surgery becomes the primary option. And the standard surgery is focused on that A1 pulley again.
Releasing it.
Exactly. It's called an A1 pulley release. The surgeon basically cuts through the pulley to open up that constricted tunnel, giving the tendon the space it needs to glide freely again.
And how is that release done? Are there different ways?
Yes, there are mainly two approaches. The traditional method is an open release. This involves making a small incision in the palm directly over the A1 pulley so the surgeon can see it and cut it under direct vision.
Okay.
This generally has very high success rates, often quoted above 90%, and relatively low complication rates, maybe around 3% or so in studies.
Sounds pretty effective. What's the alternative?
The alternative is a percutaneous release. Percutaneous just means through the skin. Here, the surgeon uses a special needle or a very small blade inserted through the skin without a larger incision to cut the pulley.
Less invasive, then?
It is less invasive, which can mean quicker recovery sometimes. However, it does carry potentially higher risks. Because you're not directly seeing the structures, there is a slightly increased risk of injuring the small digital nerves, especially in the thumb where the nerve runs very close to the pulley.
Oh.
There's also perhaps a slightly higher chance that the pulley might not be completely released compared to the open method where you can visually confirm it.
So trade-offs to consider there. And what about potential complications overall with surgery?
Well, besides the nerve injury risk we mentioned, which is thankfully rare, you could potentially get some mild bowstringing of the tendon if the release extends too far, though usually releasing just A1 is fine. Scar tissue formation is always a possibility with any surgery, and sometimes, despite a successful release, patients might still have some persistent pain or stiffness.
Right. And just quickly looping back to the congenital trigger thumb in kids,
okay.
How is that handled? Is it also surgery?
It's a bit different initially. For infants under 6 months old, there's actually a decent chance, maybe around 30%, that it resolves completely on its own without any treatment.
Co-interesting.
But if the child is older than 6 months, that chance of spontaneous resolution drops way down, maybe closer to 10%. So in those older infants or toddlers where it persists, surgery, the A1 pulley release, similar to adults, is often recommended.
Okay, that's a helpful distinction. So we've covered a lot of ground. Let's try to crystallize this with, say, 5 key takeaways or terms from our discussion.
Sounds good. 5 key terms that really capture the essence of trigger finger. First, stenosing tenosynovitis. That's the core pathology, the narrowing and inflammation. It tells you it's fundamentally a mechanical issue fueled by irritation.
Right, number one.
Second, A1 pulley. This is ground zero anatomically. Understanding its location at the MCP joint and its role as the bottleneck is crucial.
Okay, A1 pulley.
Third, congenital trigger thumb. Important to remember this distinct pediatric form, its presentation, and the different approach based on age.
Got it. Different considerations for kids.
Fourth, steroid injection. This represents the workhorse, non-operative treatment directly targeting the inflammation and swelling within the sheath.
A key tool in the toolbox.
And fifth, pulley release. This is the definitive surgical solution when other methods fail, directly addressing the mechanical block by opening up space.
Stenosing tenosynovitis, A1 pulley, congenital trigger thumb, steroid injection, and pulley release. Excellent summary.
Mm-hmm.
So, thinking about this whole thing, it really strikes me how trigger finger is almost purely a mechanical problem, a physical jamming of the system. It makes you think, doesn't it, about the incredible precision and delicate balance required for even simple movements in our hands.
It really does.
And how a relatively small disruption, like a slightly thickened pulley or tendon, can cause a significant pain and loss of function. It's a real testament to the intricate engineering of the human body and maybe how easily that intricate system could be disrupted. Something to ponder.
Absolutely. A fine-tuned machine.
We've just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia. Orthopedia by Bernstein, Pinney, and Fayette. It's available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.